So my name's Louise, I'm a mindfulness coach and
I'm Erica and I'm a mental health campaigner and a facilitator for groups.
So we are starting this podcast together. We've been friends for a while and we get on really well and have a lot to talk about on the subject of mental health. So we thought we would start a podcast and...
Yeah, I heard about you through Facebook because you run meditation groups in the local area. And I felt like we had a lot in common. So I kind of messaged you and said, do you want to get together and sort of see what we've got in common and what things we could collaborate on?
And I got very excited by that because I've been trying to do a podcast for probably about a year. And I hated the idea of doing a podcast on my own because I feel like I'm talking to myself and I have no one to bounce off of. And you're the perfect person for this.
Thank you. I think podcasting would be one of those ideas that I've had floating around. And sometimes I kind of start things and I think, oh, I'll just think about how nice it'd be to do a podcast. Like, that would be fun. And never do anything with it. So I just put a little like message out and was like, does anybody want to do a podcast?
And then you got me, me, me.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm doing a podcast now. That's a lot sooner than I expected. But yeah, I'm really pleased that we can have a go at one.
And we're doing this just in time for the new year.
Yeah.
So this is our introductory podcast, really. And we're going to be doing a weekly one from January.
Yeah.
So we will be releasing it every Saturday.
Yep. Yeah.
We'll release it every Saturday. And so really this, we're just introducing ourselves and we'll talk about a little bit about what we're going to do with this. So, I mean, my... idea for this podcast really was to talk about mental health in general and what mindfulness and meditation can do for mental health, what it's done for me, and to get a lot more about your experiences and your experiences with groups in the mix as well. And hopefully at some point we can have some guest speakers on. I know I've got a few people that I would like to invite on as guests, and I know we've got some of the same, we know a lot of the same people as well.
Yeah, it's funny how that works out. And I think actually that's something that's really nice about sort of messaging your friends and people that you've met. That's because I do meet people that are interesting and are doing things that I think, oh yeah, that's really exciting and I'd like to know a bit more about it. And that, and I'm terrible for saying let's get together and have coffee. I think it took a couple of months between me saying let's have coffee
yes,
actually having a drink together. So I think there's a few people in our orbit that we've looked at and thought, yeah, let's get them on as guests. And I think having as many different like voices and experiences, because everyone's different, aren't they? I suppose that's something that we sort of talked about, how individual mental health is,
and it is a very individual and can be a very isolating experience. But the you know, one of the things that we're probably going to be talking about at some point is the group, how groups can help with the isolation issue, I think.
Yeah, and I attended one of your meditation sessions. Again, good intentions. I've been meaning to get back to one. But what I really liked was how comfortable people felt talking about, oh, you know, I feel this way about meditation, or I find when I meditate this happens. Is that normal? Is that something other people experience, and how do I deal with that? And the creativity and the different types of meditation that you do, people have different experiences with them. So that kind of everybody kind of identifying their own little experience. I thought
it's a different, everyone has a different experience of different things. It's nice when you're in a group to be able to discuss that. That's a nice thing. But any kind of group session, I think, is a lovely thing.
And I've learnt so much from the people that have that have come to groups. I'm always amazed at how much there is to kind of learn from people and how people surprise me.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to do it.
So, I mean, what do you think, you know, where do you see this podcast going? What would you like to do with this podcast? I know we've discussed it, but for our listeners...
I think part of it is I feel quite lucky to meet lots of different people that have a story about their mental health and how they've dealt with it. And I think my journey has almost been collecting lots of different little bits of recovery and saying, I almost wished when I started to become unwell that someone had given me a roadmap. Like, you go and see your GP and they'd give you a little roadmap and they'd say, all right, these are all the different places you can get help and support. These are all the different things you might want to think about. Because for me, managing my mental health is not just one thing.
No,
it's lots of different things plucked from all kinds of different places. And I can think of people that have maybe just said, oh, you know, did you know you could do this? Or like, this really worked for me. And I thought, wow, if I'd not met you, I would never have known about that. So I think part of my intention for the podcast is probably to link into some of that knowledge from different people.
Yeah, to introduce different self-help ways for people. Because the other issue is not every self-help strategy works for each person. However, if there is a sort of a smorgasbord of self-help there at your fingertips, you can dip in and out of what could possibly work for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, it might be a bit of trial and error, but if you know, the if you're waiting for 8 months to see a counsellor on the NHS, and let's face it, not every counsellor is going to work for you.
Yeah.
You may as well try everything that comes across your path in the meantime.
Yeah, and I think that idea of there being like that big buffet of things to try, it makes it a little bit less intimidating, because I think that that image of sort of having a go and trying and maybe going, oh, that really doesn't work for me, or wow, that really did and I didn't expect it. Yeah. And almost when you try a really great food, you're like, oh, come and try this. This is really good.
Yeah, it's empowering.
It is, and I think that's part of how groups and communities really change people's lives, is when someone says, this is awesome, let me share it with you, give it a go. So I think that that is one of my intentions, and I tend to collect little nuggets of knowledge and things, so it's nice to offload it.
And to promote other groups and things, because you know, there's so many good groups out there. I mean, just promoting some of the local groups, there's Take 10, which is a local group to us that's in Dewsbury, and there's Luke's Lads, which I don't know whether you've heard of them. Luke's Lads that have recently opened up at Ponderosa. It's a men's only circuit class, and then they have a support group afterwards. That's fairly new, it's only been going for a couple of months.
See, I've not heard about that. I've heard of kind of the Andy's Man Club movement and the men in sheds.
Yeah, they work alongside Andy's Man. But that, you know, there's lots of good local groups that people don't even know about that need the light shedding on them, so that people know that there is places they can go where they can get support and meet new people that are in similar situations, so they don't have to feel alone. Just following on from when you've signed off work, that I think that for me, I find it sometimes makes the problem worse, because you get out of a routine, you become out of a routine, you find that you get stuck in a bit of a rut, you fall out of the things that you usually do, you haven't got a reason to get up in the morning, you don't have a reason to get showered, your sleeping kind of goes out of whack. And as we were talking earlier today, you know, I've had a bit of a slump recently, and my one thing is must stick to my routines. I don't know whether you've found that. I mean, like, what's your self-help kind of?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And I suppose a lot of my adult life was spent like desperately trying to hold on to a job, and then that not working out, and then crashing into a mental health crisis and having to be at home either off sick, which is an anxiety provoking, it's a place of uncertainty, isn't it? Like, when are you going to be better? When are you coming back? You need a fit note, all that kind of jazz. So there was that. And also being unemployed and on what was incapacity benefit then and is employment support allowance now, comes with its own sort of side helpings of low self-esteem and anxiety and stress. So in with that going on every day, I found I didn't have a routine, and I almost became used to the kind of chaos in my head translating into a chaotic day, because I felt so out of step with what normal people do. I'm using air quotes with normal, because I know there's no such thing, but still now sometimes I feel like, for some people, getting up in the morning it's kind of automatic, and they know what they're doing in their day, and they just sort of tough through it, and it's like they're okay, they can do it. And I suppose I learned to think of myself as someone who couldn't do it, and for whom chaos was always going to be, that's how my head is, and that's what my life is always going to be like. And it took a few years and going through some groups to learn that actually when you don't have that structure and that routine, it's really, really difficult to hold on to your sense of who you are and your self-esteem. So having, I mean, I use what I call a daily maintenance list. It's a very, very simple list of like the bare minimum I need to do every day. And most of that is the sorts of things we talk about. So what time are you going to bed? What do you do when you get up in the morning? What food do you take with you when you're on the way to the gym if you're going, so you're not hungry and angry? And we both have been a bit hangry and tired over the last few days, haven't we? Yeah. So yeah, having a routine is massive. And I can so relate to what you've said about like not having one and the damage that can incur over time.
Yeah, and even just over the space of a few days, losing your routine can really, I mean, for me especially, I feel that it really puts me out when I have a change of routine. I don't know whether it's just me, the way I am, but any kind of coming out of a routine tends to put me out. But yeah, certainly when I'm having a bit of a downer, I found recently when I've sort of started to dip, I've thought, right, I know I have to stick to my routine. I have to get up in the morning. I can't be laying in bed. I can't be, you know, sulking in bed, so to speak. I need to get up. I need to have my shower. I need to make sure I'm eating breakfast. I need to make sure I'm going out. I'm doing work. You know, even if it's the work that I'm choosing to do, like I said the other day, you know, I was talking to some people. I was like, it might be the work that I'm choosing because it's my favourite part of the job. But I'm still going to be doing work. I'm going to be doing something. I'm not going to be sit watching Netflix all day, because that's just a bad habit for to be getting into.
And an easy one to slide into.
Yeah, really easy. So many people get into it, and then you end up procrastinating. And then you feel really bad the next day because you didn't get any of the stuff done. You've got no clean clothes because your washing's collected up. You know, like I said, if I haven't washed my hair and I've got to go somewhere the next day, and you know, my hair's all greasy, and then I'm late, and it puts you all behind for things that you can manage. You've just got to keep on top of all these little things. And it seems like, you know, I'm saying it, and most people would be like, if they haven't suffered the highs and lows of depression, they won't understand those lows of not being able to get out of bed and not being able to get in the shower. But those moments really set you back.
They do. And I think when I not just from personal experience, but from the people that I've worked alongside in groups, people will sort of identify themselves as someone who used to be very good at routines. So I've had the pleasure of working with people who've been in the military and who come out and are like, routines are like the stuff of my life before I got unwell. I was so good at them, and now I can't get it together to get myself washed and dressed in the morning. What's wrong with me? So there's guilt. Or the other type of person, and I suppose I fall into this category, someone who likes to think of themselves as a bit of a free spirit, and I'm a bit like, I have a bohemian lifestyle. I don't need to make my bed in the morning because I'm creative and like freewheeling, and that's a nice idea. But also then that becomes I'm the sort of person who can't. I'm not good at doing laundry. I'm not good at making appointments for myself. I can't do it. And then there's a bit of guilt because then you're reliant on the people in your life that are like, make your bed.
Yeah.
Why can't you do it? And I think last time we talked about it, we sort of hit on the idea of mental illness can actually affect your brain's process to start a task. We call it executive functioning. It becomes like harder for your brain to figure out how to begin to make a cup of tea or how to begin to make your bed. So it's not something you're choosing to do because you're lazy or because you're not in the military anymore and that means you're just rubbish at doing these things. It depression impairs your ability.
It's bridging that gap. It's that, I don't even know what the word is, that
people talk a lot to me about willpower and they say I don't have it and I should have it, and obviously I don't feel guilty enough about not getting it together, because if I did, I would just get it together. Other people find this easy. Normal people find this easy. Mm. Why is it so hard? And I think that sort of misconception about self-care and about looking after your mental health is just such a barrier in so many different ways. And I think one of the things that we talked about and identified, and I suppose really the essence of mindfulness and what you do is that gentleness of
being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Because we are not kind to ourselves a lot of the time, we aren't. And yeah, that's the difference with how my current situation is compared to how I was 5 years ago. I'm actually being kind to myself this time round, whereas 5 years ago I was absolutely extraordinarily horrible to myself, which left me in a state where I was suicidal. Whereas this time, you know, the doctor said to me, even this morning the doctor said to me, you know, are you having thoughts of self-harm? And I said, actually no, not at all. And I thought to myself, I'm quite proud of myself.
That's a massive piece of progress.
I know I feel like crap some days, and you know, I'm crying for no reason a lot of the time, but I'm not having those thoughts, which is, to me, even though I feel, I know I'm depressed, I know that I'm not there, because I am actually being nice to myself, which is the huge difference. But if I hadn't been teaching myself compassion over the last 5 years, I wouldn't be where I am.
Yeah.
So to me, that's where the difference is. It's teaching yourself to be nice to yourself, because we aren't most of the time. You know, it's built into us to criticize, and because let's face it, we spend a lot of years being criticized by other people, teachers, parents, people around us. We're judged, we judge other people, and it's hard to get out of that.
I think that idea of sort of willpower and guilt and self-control is so it's all the way through our culture. You're right, in schools, in families, in workplaces. That idea that it's about you make a decision to feel better or get better or do better, and then like you do, and if you don't nail it, it's because you really weren't genuine in trying to get better. And I suppose that more than anything has been the sort of key to unlocking some of the difficulties I've had, and I've watched other people identify that for themselves and say, actually, that perfectionism and that guilt is just such an obstacle to just feeling better about the life I'm in, because there are things that go on in people's lives that are stressful and do trigger off depression, and sometimes we don't have control over those things, and that is just a really difficult thing to accept. But in a way, we always do have that opportunity of being like, am I going to wash my face and have a cup of tea and try again?
See, that's, you know, the thing. I know people that are going through stuff right now that I could not fathom how they are surviving, how they are getting up in the morning. To me, I would just want to die. So the fact that I'm feeling sorry for myself right now makes me feel guilty. It does, it makes me feel guilty, and I just think I've got no right to feel bad. So, you know, the fact that, you know, say I'm not being very nice to myself right now. Do you know what I mean? But no, it we compare ourselves a lot, and it makes me appreciate the fact that there are different stages of your life, that you things that you go through. Some of the stuff that you go through, it's hormonal. It's you know, there's so many different factors to depression. There's different health issues. There's different actual physical things that go on. There's different environmental things. And in life, there are different stresses, different big life events that happen, and each one has to be dealt with differently, and each one has to be honoured in its own way, and it has to be felt, and you do have to go through it, and you do have to get through it in its own way, which is not always fun, but at the end of the day, you know, you've got to get through it.
And I think you explained that beautifully, that there are so many different aspects to dealing with mental health and depression, and different triggers and how they affect different people. And I suppose sometimes in sort of mental health wellness circles, that idea of self-care is it's almost like a bit of a sticking plaster Like, it just, if you just, if you're nice to yourself and have a gratitude diary, like, everything will be fine. Just get a nicer gratitude diary and just do a bit more, like, mindfulness and it'll all be fine.
Never as simple as that.
No, and I think that was one of my other, like, motivations for getting together with you and doing this podcast, because I felt instinctively like you got that.
If it was just that, then I would never have a recurrence of depression. I practice mindfulness every day.
Wouldn't it be great
every day? You know, that would be fine. But there's a chemical imbalance there, and it's never going to be a cure-all. But there is never a cure-all for every single person, because everybody is built differently. There is different life events that happen that can trigger different situations, and it might not be, you know, someone could have something really tragic happen to them or traumatic, and it may not trigger depression for them. They may deal with it very well. However, it could happen to someone else and it could trigger depression for them. Everybody is different.
Yeah.
And you just never know. It could be because there's a full moon. It could be.
Yeah.
You literally don't know, and everyone is different. However, there are so many different ways to deal with things that why not try everything, you know?
Yeah, and I think that idea of, it was just so perfect when you said earlier that kind of smorgasbord of different things. I think in a way that is the hopeful side of having a mental health issue that you want to deal with. The hopeful side is that there are lots of different things and, you know, there are as many things to try and as many podcasts to listen to as there are people to sort of have the problem and want to solve it.
Absolutely. There are so many sufferers, so many people going through it out there. The fact is, it's not just you, and you are not alone.
Yeah.
And that is one thing that you should always remember, because especially for the men out there, and I don't know whether we're going to have many male listeners.
I hope so.
It would
and
be
male
nice.
Guests as well.
It would be nice to have male guests. In fact, I have an idea.
We have someone on the list.
Well, not particularly someone in particular, but I'm hoping to persuade some male guests to come on. But just to, you know, highlight that. Forgotten my train of thought then. Completely lost it. No, you're not alone, and men in particular will sit and act as if it's just, you know, they can forget that it's happening to them and pretend it's not happening to them and not talk. And it's not good to do that, because it's okay to ask for help, it's okay to admit when there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And it's okay to ask for support from people around you, especially people around you, because they're the ones that have to deal with the anger, the upset, the mood changes, because that's what happens when you're having a bout of depression. You do have mood changes, and those people around you have to suffer the consequences of even me. And I'm the most patient, placid person you could ever wish to meet, and recently, even I've shouted, and I rarely shout.
And you have a house full of teenagers to test your patience levels on a regular basis, and I've witnessed the sainthood action. I can confirm you are indeed a patient person. It's true.
I shouted this week, I promise.
Oh, I think that, I mean, I've had groups that I never know before I start a group what the makeup, the demographic of that group is going to be, because I don't have a referring system. People just sign up and then they turn up. So I have had groups that have been majority of men. And I suppose when I had one of those groups, I did stop and think, as a woman, am I going to have like really different ideas about mental health and self-care? And maybe there's just a whole bit of experience I'm not going to get, that having a mental health problem and being a man is just, there's an experience I'm just not privy to. Like, maybe I'm just gonna be this irrelevant lady with my lavender oil and my bubble baths, and like, it's just it's not gonna land well. But I was really impressed by how open the guys in the group were, and how willing they were to talk about the pressures that were on them, and how that meant that they were less likely to share about their mental health. but also that there was a kind of a universal level
of
crappiness of mental illness that we kind of all, regardless of gender, kind of share. And actually it was one of my favourite groups, because once the guys in it got the thing that worked for them, or the thing that started to work for them, and they were like, oh, I'm going to try this, their willingness to make changes was really inspiring. They were just out there, like, kind of unstoppable, really.
It's that moment of empowerment, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's when someone realises that they have that bit of power to make the changes themselves that makes all the difference. I do truly believe that.
It was such a pleasure to see, because I'm aware from some of the suicide training that I've done that actually suicide is one of the leading causes for men between the ages, I think it's 35 and 65. We lose more men in the UK to suicide in that age range than any other cause of death. That, if you polled the average person in the street and said, what do most men in that age group in this country die of, I'm willing to bet suicide is not the first thing
they say
that they would say. And actually, when I work with someone and it turns out they are a man in that age range, that is what I'm thinking about. Especially in areas like ours, which are industrial, which are northern. I was working with some people in Leeds yesterday, and we were looking at like the postcodes that correspond with the highest suicide rates, and LS12, if you're a guy in LS12, there's a significant risk of suicide. And when you think about it in those terms, I feel like it's really important that we do share the things that are working and that have been useful, and get those groups out there, because it really does, it will save lives. And there have been times when I've just felt like there's not really much reason to go on, and hearing from somebody else who says you're not alone, something worked for me, and there'll be something that works for you. It saves a life, doesn't it? It saved my life.
Well, definitely. Well, hopefully we'll have more people that want to come forward to be a guest on the podcast, or at least maybe message us with some experiences of what they what's worked for them or not worked for them, or groups that they know of that they find helpful. That would be good.
Yeah, and I'd encourage our listeners as well, if there's a topic that you particularly want us to look at
or talk about,
it might not be one that we're massively familiar with, but it's definitely something that we can look at and learn about and open up some conversations about.
I'm definitely interested in learning more on different subjects. That's why I wanted to chat to you more, because you know, you've got different experiences to me, you know different areas than I do, especially working with the different mental health groups. That really fascinates me.
And vice versa with the mindfulness, because I have experience of mindfulness, but it's quite limited. And I've not been able to do too much mindfulness with other people and in social kind of group settings. So I'm fascinated as to how that works. So I feel like we've covered loads.
We have covered loads. I think it's been a really good introduction, actually.
We have grand ambitions.
We do have grand ambitions.
Want to do it all.
It's going to be a good year for Erica and Louise.
It will be. And we talked a bit as well about January. And New Year's resolution fever, didn't we? About, I guess it comes into perfectionism.
Comparison.
Yeah.
Comparison. Oh, I don't like it. It's like the one of my bugbears is comparison. We're constantly comparing ourselves to other people. This is one of the reasons, I'm sure this is one of the reasons why I've had a big slump recently, because I've been comparing. And I always, you know, tell people, don't compare, don't compare, don't compare. And I've done exactly the same thing. I've compared and made myself feel terrible because I've compared. And knowing what it does, I've still compared. So I'm now backtracking and you know, appreciating myself for the things I am, the things, you know, rather than...
And we were talking about introducing each other or ourselves earlier, and I was like, what would I say? Like, Louise does Louise things, but you do Louise things. No one can do Louise things like you do them, because there's only one of you. But I think, that New Year's temptation to be like, right, I'm going to overhaul my life, I'm going to solve all my problems, I'm going to buy a big new diary and go to the gym and... like fancy makeup every day and
green vegetables every day.
Gonna be a new man or a new woman. And we talked a little bit about habits, because habits don't really work like that, do they?
You can't get rid of...
No.
You can't... You have to replace habits.
And you build them over time and you maintain them. They're not... You can't just be like, January the 1st, I'm now awesome.
It's not... That's no way of doing it. I read a really good book on holiday last year called The Power of Habit. That inspired me to give up smoking. That was in March, April this year. I've not smoked since.
That's a massive achievement.
But I did also have help with a TED talk called Mindful, The Power of Habit, and that was about mindful smoking, which I started doing mindful smoking, which if you've ever tried mindful eating with chocolate, for example, it tastes terrible when you mindfully eat something that's processed. It tastes horrible. The smoke tasted horrible. And that helped me to give up smoking.
I would never have thought that there could be a mindful smoking, but actually when you said it, I thought, because I guess smoking, it's an automatic habit, it's a thing, it's a ritual, you do it over and over, you don't really think about it.
You have to replace the habit. So yeah. I replaced the actual smoking habit with a breathing exercise instead. So instead of going out and having a cigarette, I switched it for a 2-minute breathing exercise.
I feel like we have to do an episode on maybe a mindful smoking episode. Maybe
January.
We should. So I feel like January.
Give up smoking.
Yeah.
Probably be a good one for them. Mm. But yeah, that was 9 months ago nearly.
Yeah.
I did have a weak moment. I will not lie. I did have a weak moment the other day, last week, when teenagers were driving me nuts. My son, who still smokes, he was supposed to give up with me back in April. He left his tobacco on the side. I rolled a cigarette and had one puff, and I choked that much. It tasted horrible. I choked that much. I got myself sore throat. I thought, why am I even attempting this? This is ridiculous. I know better than this. And I put it out. That was such a bad idea. I don't even know what entered my head at that
time.
Sometimes
you have to just, you have to kind of go back, and then you're like, actually, I remember.
I had a really weak moment. I just felt absolutely... That, I suppose that was my version of self-harm.
Yeah, and I guess everybody has those
setbacks.
If you're loosening off that really powerful habit that's been there for a long, long time, those setbacks are going to be part of that process, aren't they?
It's funny though, because since then I don't have, even like the morning cigarette that I thought that I would never get out of the habit of wanting, I never wake up in the morning thinking, I could have a cigarette, because I never get that feeling anymore.
Wow.
Literally never have that feeling. I don't even, you know, when I have a cup of coffee, and I used to think I'd never be able to give up having a coffee with a cigarette, I don't even get that, and I haven't done, not since I gave up, which is really strange. It was a very conscious decision, but I think that's the other thing. I was so aware and conscious. The whole process was very intentional.
Yeah,
but I think that's part of the process, but that's for another episode.
I feel like I'm really interested to know a bit more about that. And I think there's something there for January about habits and applying mindfulness to something that you think of as naughty or bad, or I'm gonna always have to keep doing this because it's a thing now. I'm always gonna want to do that when I have a coffee, or I'm always gonna want to do that when I'm stressed out with my family.
Yeah, because willpower willpower is pulling something up a hill, but you don't have to do that. You don't have to push something up the hill for something to work. You can just let go and fly up the hill. You can, and you get to the top of the hill. Yeah, it's fine. I got there.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I love that image. Yeah, because I often do feel when people talk about managing their mental health, what they're used to thinking of that in terms of is willpower. Is I'm pulling myself and my brain up that hill, and if I'm not doing it or I'm not succeeding, it's because I don't want it enough, or I'm not committed, or I'm not strong enough. And the people I meet are the strongest. They're so incredibly strong and resilient, and I meet people and I just think, how are you still standing? Because they've been through so much and they're suffering so much. It's incredible. that people are still, and they're like, I'm not a strong person, I'm a weak person, and I have no willpower, and I'm a terrible person, and I'm guilty, and no one, I don't know why anyone puts up with me, and the fact that I can't do any of this stuff.
Yeah.
So that idea of flying up the hill instead sounds really...
much better.
Sounds good.
Vast improvement on the original.
Yes. It's parcel season.
Yes.
You'll hear the thuds on doormats.
That's actually my new phone charger, I think.
Nice.
Being delivered.
It's essential.
After my son broke the other one in temper the other day. Yeah, that's teenage boys for you.
Yeah. So it sounds like we've got some ideas.
We've got ideas, and I think definitely the habits one for January would probably be a good one. So I think we'll leave it here, and you happy with that?
I am. I feel like we've cracked our very first episode. Never done a podcast before. Didn't think I would be recording the first episode by the end of the year. So I feel like it's a massive win. High five.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. And if you like it, keep on listening, share it, and hope to see you all in January.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas indeed.